You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
And now from Mexico, the $3 billion man, drug lord El Chapo, the kingpin of the Sinaloa drug cartel, is in custody of Mexican authorities who considered him Mexico's most wanted man. Even Chicago law enforcement called Joaquin Guzman Loera enemy number one. Over the weekend, he was captured in a joint effort by Mexican authorities and the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration after a manhunt that lasted over a decade, stretched across at least five continents. Juan Grillo joins us. He's the author of El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. Welcome, Juan.
Good to be here.
So this is a very significant capture. I'm wondering what it was that basically triggered him finally coming into apprehension. It seemed at the end he was pretty weary of being on the run.
Well, he'd been on the run for 13 years since he escaped from a so-called maximum security prison in Mexico by going out with the laundry. And he'd been moving around, and they think he was moving around this mountainous area, the Sierra Madre Occidental, big mountainous area in Mexico, big enough to hide an army in, as Pancho Villa hid an army there when he ran away from General Pershing after he attacked New Mexico back in the Mexican Revolution. So he was moving around different safe houses there. And a guy, although he was a billionaire on the Forbes billionaire list, although I don't think it was an exact science, but though he had billions of dollars selling cocaine, crystal meth, heroin and marijuana to Americans, perhaps he couldn't really enjoy all that money being on the run. So he started getting a bit sloppy and going back to the cities of Culiacán and Mazatlán and going into luxury houses, apartments there with various wives and girlfriends, and trying to enjoy some of that money. And that was maybe what led to his capture.
So, the old Shawshank Redemption scenario there, going out with the laundry in prison. I mean, very, very humble, survival techniques on the part of El Chapo to stay alive. But what did him in the end is that he basically wanted to live a little over the last 13 years.
Yeah, he did. They started raiding some houses, arresting certain people, tracking cell phones, listening in on wiretaps, even having some drones in there following some things, an effort, as you said, between the U.S. administration, the DEA, and maybe some other agencies, maybe some spy agencies involved.
How much of this do you think is the technology being developed to track someone like this, and how much of this is a realignment in the economy of the drug business in the sense that there's a proliferation of crystal meth production in the United States, legalization of marijuana in two states in the United States? It suddenly makes a drug kingpin maybe worth a little bit less.
Well, the technology thing is very interesting. I think these manhunts, it has been compared to the manhunt for Osama bin Laden. So an unfortunate comparison because they're obviously very different figures. Guzman's more like a Pablo Escobar and Al Capone than bin Laden. But it's interesting how you get such a high-profile figure and they can escape justice for a long time. So the technology, the people are trying to, I think it's hard to stay off the radar eventually, as they've shown with Chapo Guzman, with bin Laden, with other figures. They're going to catch up with you eventually if you're a figure who's this connected. In terms of the drug policy reform, it's a very interesting time when you still have the Mexican army burning marijuana crops in a mission supported by the United States, yet there's marijuana legalized in Colorado, Washington State, medical marijuana in a whole bunch more states. So it's kind of the drug wars at a very funny place right now, or the war on drugs. We've got policy changing, but still this real fighting and violence on the ground and these military-backed efforts to take down kingpins like Chapo Guzman.
So what of the drug cartel Sinaloa? Do they go legal in this environment? What do they do? Do they shift away from, crystal meth and cocaine and move towards drugs that might be legal agricultural commodities in 10 years?
Well, that's going to be very interesting how this will play out on the ground. There was a guy who was giving a talk in Mexico about the book with a bunch of people, and the guy said he knew a lot of cartel members, and he said, what are they going to do if marijuana is legalized? You've got to keep these guys in work. So it's kind of obviously some concern there in the ranks about what it would mean. When you have a legal business, it totally changes the dynamics. The reason that drugs are worth so much money is because they're illegal. Cocaine when it's coca leaves in Colombia, it's worth about $80 for what makes a kilo. It's worth about $2,000 when it becomes a kilo brick. And it's worth some $150,000 when it's sold here in New York on the streets. So that markup is absolutely enormous. It's an incredible business. And that's why everyone goes crazy killing each other to try and own that business. And if it was legalized, it would take that money out of the black economy. And it would become like alcohol or like anything else where you have to, you know, make up, you know, make it for 20 pesos, sell it for 22 pesos, and that kind of, you know, hard markup.
Well, finally then, look over the past 20 years. I mean, 20 years ago, if we were speaking, could we have imagined that the situation in Colombia today, which is so radically different from what it was 20 years ago, would have transpired the way that it has, and that the drug war in Mexico right now seems to be winding down on some level, and that the political stability is being reasserted even as legalization is taking place north of the border?
Well, the drug war in Mexico, it's the government's done very well in selling itself as holding things down better, selling things as, you know, as being quieter. The escalation of the Mexican drug war, which went on from 2008 to 2011, has kind of plateaued. Before, we were seeing years where it was tripling, quadrupling the level of homicides. Now we're seeing about a kind of plateaued level of some 20,000 homicides a year, still very, very many killings in Mexico. But there's still parts of the country which are pretty crazy. I've just been in Michoacán state, where people have been so fed up of the drug cartel moving into extortion and kidnapping, they've taken up arms themselves, have become vigilante militias. They got barricades, AK-47s, and are reclaiming towns, and some quite crazy scenes. So still a lot of things going on there before this drug war in Mexico is over.
Not exactly the moment to buy real estate in Juárez. Perhaps.
Well, Juarez maybe is a city which might have bounced back, but there's certain place in Mexico, yeah, where it is a difficult situation. And yeah, definitely still a lot of concern about safety, public safety right there.
Well, this is certainly a milestone. El Chapo in custody, the kingpin of the Sinaloa drug cartel, most wanted man in Mexico. Juan Grillo, journalist who has covered Mexican cartels for more than a decade, author of El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. Juan, thanks as always.
Good to be here.
The Takeaway is supported by Reputation.com. With tools to help businesses and professionals monitor and manage online reviews, now offering a review kiosk to help customers create reviews. Learn more at Reputation.com.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.